Welcome to the Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host today. It's good to have you tune in with me. I'm Executive Director of Christian Home Educators of Colorado, but also a pastor and a father of five. And the broadcasting with a message of truth and relationships to a lost and lonely world, suggesting that there is an absolute truth because there is an absolute God. But we're broadcasting in a day where we are seeing a massive increase in the incidence of atheism in our country as well as Europe. And what this means, folks, is that countries that used to be Christian are now turning atheistic. That's because, you know, you can only stay lukewarm, wishy-washy, fake Christians for only so long. After a while, these wishy-washy, fake Christian churches and nations turn into atheistic nations because people get tired of being lukewarm. You know, they get tired of being compromising Christians. Okay, it's time to be self-consistent with our atheism. You know, we've been talking about being gods and being the standard of what is true and what is right. We've brought in autonomy into the Christian church for the last 100 years. Now it's time to just say, hey, I am my own God, and there shall be no other gods before me because I am God. And they turn all atheistic and therefore believe themselves to be God, and nobody else can be God. Well, the problem, of course, being that the stakes are really, really, really high when it comes to the existence of a transcendent God. You see, either God exists and you're in big trouble because you don't want to acknowledge God's existence and you've kind of given God the finger. Either God exists and you're in big trouble, buddy, or God doesn't exist. And if God doesn't exist, then you're just another piece of cosmic dust. You're just another guy who's trying to pretend to be God with a bunch of other people who are trying to be God, and you're just really cosmic dust. Highly advanced, evolved form of cosmic dust, but just cosmic dust. Either God exists and you're in trouble, or God doesn't exist and you're just cosmic dust. Well, the problem, of course, here is that if you're cosmic dust, there's a high probability that, well, you don't even exist at all. That is, once you've denied the existence of God, you've pretty much lost the concept of the existence of yourself. And I guess this is the direction most people go. They work their way into non-existence because they'd rather not exist than to deal with the awful possibility of the existence of God. Anything but to have to deal with the reality of God. See, that's the way the human heart is, as it's set in enmity against God. That's why we work from atheistic, naturalistic materialism eventually towards a relativism and a nihilism. And that's the direction that postmodern society has gone. We're effectively nihilists and relativists now. And but folks, it's time as Christians to stand up and say there is a God. And it's time for you to deal with that God. And it's time to get rid of the mealy-mouthed, compromising, wishy-washy approaches to Christianity and just state the truth. And that's why I like Ray Comfort. Ray Comfort is one of the most solid evangelists for the Christian faith in America today. He's a straight shooter. He's a straight shooter. He's orthodox. He understands law and grace. There's no flim-flam, no wishy-wash in what Ray Comfort has to offer. And he has a new book out on atheism called You Can Lead an Atheist to Evidence, but You Can't Make Him Think. Answers to questions from angry skeptics. We're going to talk to Ray Comfort one more time on this radio program next on Generations. Stay with me. This is Kevin Swanson. Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org. back on Generations, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson with you today. We're going to talk about evangelism in America, evangelizing atheists. And with me is Ray Comfort, author of 60 books, but now the new book, You Can Lead an Atheist to Evidence, But You Can't Make Him Think. Great title, Ray.
Yeah, well, God's given us six senses, and the sixth sense is common sense.
Uh-huh.
And that's one the atheist doesn't use, and I want to provoke that sixth sense.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciated the general spirit of the book. Yeah, I read Richard Dawkins' book, God Delusion, a few other atheist tomes, and these guys don't have a sense of humor either. I mean, they talk about a lack of sense. They don't have a sense of humor, do they?
That is so true. That, I don't think I've ever seen Richard Dawkins smile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what's the problem with them? I mean, why can't they crack a grin? I mean, I suppose they've got it in for God, and that's a problem.
Well, they're very angry because of, specifically because of Christianity, because what we remind them of is that they're a moral creature, that they've got moral responsibility to God. We say things like Jesus said, if you look at a woman and lust for her, you commit adultery with her in your heart. And that's a huge and heavy wet blanket for sinful humanity. And what atheism does is that in evolution, it just gets rid of that moral responsibility so that man becomes a beast, an animal, who is just in his fornication seeking to further his species.
You know, and one of the questions you ask in the book on this, which is really, really, really insightful, is why are these atheists so incredibly passionately hateful against a God who doesn't exist? You know, there's got to be an issue here. That's a psychological question, of course, but it's a good question.
And an atheist is someone who pretends there's no God.
Yeah.
I mean, Romans 1 tells us that the creation testifies that without excuse. I mean, it screams every area you look at. Intelligent design. I'll give $10,000 to any scientist who can make any or create anything material from nothing. We cannot do it. We can recreate. I mean, if we could just make just a little bunch of grass, just some grass blades, then all we need is a machine that does the work of the cow to chew it up and make it to milk and make cream. We can make butter. We can make yogurt. We can make ice cream. But we can't do it. We can't create a grain of sand from nothing. So how intellectually dishonest is it to say that we believe that man can't do this, but nothing did it in the beginning? There was no intelligent mind. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. It reminds me of the joke that goes, it's a couple of naturalistic, materialistic scientists come up to God and say, hey, we figured out how to make a man. God says, okay, let's do it, you know? Let's have this little contest going. The guy reaches down to grab some dirt. He says, wait, go get your own dirt. Yeah. That's my dirt.
That is incredible stuff, you know. We come from the dirt physically. Everything we've eaten to make us grow and from babies into adults comes from the dirt. All the soil nutrients feed the flesh of the peach and the apricot, and the cow eats the grass, which comes from the soil and makes the milk. Everything comes back to the earth. It's quite incredible. It's an absolute miracle what God's done.
It sure is. Okay, let's get back to atheism for a second. A huge rise in atheism. I don't think there's any question. Everybody's saying, hey, atheists everywhere now, Europe, America. And really what's happening is these guys are coming out of these Christian nations. And they're sons of Christian parents or grandsons or great-grandsons of Christians. But what's happening is I think our audience, the audience that we're reaching here in Europe and America, are people who are largely apostatizing away from the Christian faith. I mean, they've been taught for generations, maybe 1,000 years, that God is a factor, God's important, hell exists, and so forth. But the last 100 years or so, you have this huge rise of the Darwins and Nietzsche's, you know, sons of Lutherans and so forth and so on, that are just rejecting the faith. And this is really our audience now, isn't it? It's a bunch of people who've just turned away from their Christian heritage.
Well, yeah, a lot of them are what we commonly call backsliders, but never slid forward in the first place, or false conversions. But, you know, I had dinner last year with 40 atheists at their invitation, and we had a wonderful time. I had a group photo afterwards, and I signed some books. There's good atheists and there are bad atheists, and recently we've seen a rise of bad atheists who they don't just have an atheistic agenda. They want to strip from Americans the liberty that we have to worship God. They hate Christmas. They hate nativity scenes. They want under God taken out of the Pledge of Allegiance. They want in God we trust taken out of our money. They're suing the Gideons for giving Bibles out in schools. They don't like prayer inaugurations. They don't like A.D. and B.C. They want to change that. And in 1963, it just took one atheist to get rid of prayer and Bible reading out of our schools. So this book has been written in an answer to that. And we've also, if I may say so, created a website called pulltheplugonatheism.com that exposes atheism and evolution for what it is.
Why are they so bitter? against Christians? Why are they getting aggressive and so opposed to Christians and even freedom of speech at some points?
Yeah, it's definitely the moral thing. It's the moral responsibility. They're being, you know, the counter-minded is enmity against God. It's not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. So it's the moral law that offends them, and that's what Christianity upholds. You know, what do you say when your 17-year-old emails you and says, "Hey, Mum, Dad, appreciate your paying for my education, appreciate your sacrifice. I've been here for the first semester, and I got to tell you, I don't believe in God anymore. I believe in evolution because it's scientific. There's no moral absolutes. Therefore, I believe in gay rights, gays' right to get married, and also for a woman's right to choose. And I know this is going to hurt Mum and Dad because you've got your standards, but I'm moving in with my girlfriend. I hope you still can love and accept me. I still love you." What do you say to him? Or your husband says, "Sweetie, been watching the Discovery Channel, and, you know, Jesus could have been married and had kids. And evolution's scientific, the Bible's fairy tales. I won't be going to church with you anymore, honey." What do you say to him? And that's why we've written the book and created this website, because we just want to stand up against this tide of atheism and pull a plug on it.
Yeah, and I think another problem is you've got a lot of wishy-washy compromising Christianity out there, and you address that in the book as well. You just say, hey, a lot of people's configuration of Christianity is false because they've been taught the wrong things all these years.
Yeah, and also we've got a false understanding of atheism. You know, you say the average Christian's atheist, and they immediately think intellectual, and yet it's the exact opposite. An atheist is someone who believes that nothing created everything. Now, he'll deny it through gritted teeth because it's intellectually embarrassing. But if I say to you, I have no belief that my Ford truck had a maker, that means I think nothing made it. It just happened, which is a scientific impossibility. On pulltheplugonatheism.com, we have quotes from Cornell University saying nothing created everything. We've got quotes from physicists saying nothing created everything, and even a clip from Animal Planet where our kids are being taught that nothing created everything, which is just craziness. I mean, if nothing created everything, then nothing is not nothing. It is something. It's a creative force. And sometimes you'll get an atheist saying, okay, I believe that something created everything. It just wasn't God, which reveals his motive.
Yeah. And when you talk about origins, it's evolution that seems to be a major breakthrough for, you know, a lot of atheists. This is sort of the holy grail of their faith, isn't it? I mean, evolution is it.
Yeah. Listen to this, though. Imagine if I'm an atheistic believer in evolution, and I believe there was a Big Bang, and then there were primitive so-called life forms, and over millions of years, even billions of years, we watched the first dog evolve to maturity.
Yeah.
He's got ears, he's got teeth, he's got a skull, he's got liver, heart, lungs, kidneys, he's got four legs and a wagging tail, and his eyes have evolved after these millions of years of being blind. Suddenly he can see, and he needs to see because he's got to find a female.
Yeah.
She's got to have evolved at the right place, the right time, the right reproductive organs, and a desire to mate, or he's a dead dog. He's got to find a female to keep the species going. Then you have to translate that over to elephants, giraffes, lions, tigers, horses, cattle, sheep, goats, fish, and birds. Every single species has to evolve alongside a female at the right place, right time, right reproductive organs, and a desire to mate, or the species can't keep going. Evolution is intellectual suicide. The Bible says God created man in his own image with moral responsibility, male and female, and the ability to reproduce after their own kind.
So when it really comes down to it, you start digging around for their evidence in their whole evolutionary construct. There is none. You just start chipping away, and there's nothing there. There's no rational reason to believe it.
Yeah, no. Think of that whole blood, the blood vessels and the heart thing. If the heart evolved first, why did it evolve when there was no blood? What was it beating for? If there was blood, how did it get around if there's no blood vessels? If the blood vessels evolved first, why did they evolve when there was no blood to ship around? The only way to intellectually reconcile the whole thing is to say God made man fully functional, physically functional, with a skull, with a brain, with kidneys, liver, lungs, heart, blood vessels, and skin to hold it in, and he made female alongside him so he could reproduce, and he did the same with dogs, cats, horses, goats, cows. Everything was made with male and female as they are, as dogs, cats. There's no transitional forms in the fossil record.
Yeah, and no reason to believe in naturalistic evolution. And yet, these evolutionists, many of them are convinced to be atheists because they feel they have evidence. So why is that? I mean, well, they're just reaching for nothing, aren't they?
I took a camera crew to Paris last year, and we... we visited the Grand Evolution Museum. We spent an hour looking for the evolution displays. We found Origin of Species in a glass case, and we had to ask an attendant, where's your evolution display? And we were pointed to a back corner where there was a stuffed monkey with a tag Lucy written on it. That's all they had, and that's typical of evolution. They say things like there are millions of fossils, transitional forms. Yeah, there are, but they're not evidence of evolution. They're evidence of God's creation. There are bones of little dogs, big dogs, small dinosaurs, big dinosaurs. But there's no species-to-species transitional forms in the fossil record.
Yeah, it's just mind-blowing. All right, so you get an atheist, and you start to talk to him over coffee. What are the common arguments he's going to bring against the Christian faith? You're going to hear a lot of them. You address them in your book.
Yeah, well, who made God is a top one. That's asked usually as a statement, not a question, because I don't think it can have an answer. But it's very, very simple. God is eternal. He created time and subjected man to it, and we dwell within the dimension of time that God created. And because we're in time, logic demands there must be a beginning and an end. But God doesn't dwell in the dimension of time. He dwells in eternity, where we will go when we die, where there's neither beginning nor end. That's why God calls himself I Am. He's the ever-present one. He's not subject to time. And you know, it can be reconciled in the mind with the fact that space has no beginning and no end. Whatever direction you go in space, there's not a big brick wall saying the end on the wall, because there is. I want to know what's behind the brick wall. Even though it hurts our brains, we just have to accept, by faith, that space has no beginning, no end, no matter what direction you go, and God is exactly the same. He's eternal. And it hurts the brain, but we just have to accept it.
All right, folks. Ray Comfort, the author of You Can Lead an Atheist to Evidence, But You Can't Make Him Think. What's the goal? What's the goal? Are you trying to convince him into the kingdom of God? I think I once heard a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. So are we trying to argue him into the kingdom of God? What's the goal in the discussion with that atheist?
Well, I'm not out to convince them that God exists.
Yeah.
That really is a non-issue, because I know that he knows that God exists. I know that God has given light to every man. I know that he has a conscience. So what I want to do is not speak to his intellect, the place of argument, according to Romans 8, verse 7, the natural mind is enmity against the law of God. I want to speak to his conscience. So when I meet an atheist, and this is virtually what the book does, I just speak to his conscience for a few moments. It's like fishing. You've got the bait disguising the hook. I'm a fisher of men. The bait is the apologetical argument. There's no conviction of sin. It's kind of sweet to the taste. They don't mind a little bit of a sword fight. And then once I've got them, I pull the hook in. And the hook is God's law, the Ten Commandments. So as quickly as I can, I move from the intellect, saying, you know, there's a building, therefore a builder. There's a painting, therefore a painter. There's creation, therefore there's a creator. And I say to him, so do you think you're a good person? He says, yeah. So if there's a heaven, you'd make it there? Yeah, no problem. So let's have a little test to see if you would make it if there is a heaven, and I take him through the Ten Commandments. Say, you know, Jesus said, if you look at a woman and lust after her, you commit adultery with her in your heart. Ever done that? He says, oh, I do that all the time. Ever lied or stolen her? Mm-hmm, all the time. Ever use God's name in vain, even though you don't believe in him? Yep, do it all the time. So, hey, John, then you're a lying, thieving, blasphemous, adulterate heart by your own admission, and you have to face God on Judgment Day whether you believe in him or not. And what happens is that his conscience kicks in and does its duty. The conscience is the judge in the courtroom of the mind. It's independent of the will, and it accuses, and it's so powerful, it's driven men to suicide. And that's our confidence that God will convict of sin, righteousness, and judgment through those commandments, through the gospel, and the conscience will do its duty and show him that he's a sinner. And that's when the good news of the gospel begins to make sense. Christ died for his sins, rose again on the third day.
And that's the power of God unto salvation, and that's the power of your message, Ray, and we appreciate what you're doing. You know, and talking about morality, I think a lot of people think they're pretty good. You read guys like Richard Dawkins, okay? You've got these long moralistic sections of his book where he's talking about how Richard is more moral than the God of the Bible.
Yeah, well, what Richard does is he's guilty of atheistic idolatry. And by that I mean he creates a God that's repulsive. He creates it in his own image and his own imagination. And then he rejects that God. And I've got to say, so would I. I'd become an atheist if I believed in the God that Dawkins believes in. Well, that he doesn't believe in. Because he creates a tyrant from the Old Testament and then tosses it out, a tyrant that has no love or mercy or grace, which is the balanced view Scripture gives of him. You know, on Darwin's birthday, I was celebrating on the 12th of this month, because you can lead an atheist to evidence, but you can't make him think. Push Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, off the number one spot on Amazon.com in the atheism category,
okay,
and the book came number one, which greatly thrilled me.
That's great. Yeah.
And the publishers want people to go, not to them, they want people to go to Amazon.com, because we want to drive the book into the secular market.
Right. Pick up the book, folks, at Amazon.com. That's You Can Lead an Atheist to Evidence, but you can't make him think. You know, and these atheists are very, very moralistic when they don't even believe in any moral absolutes. That's the crazy thing. There's that inconsistency in their worldview.
Yeah. You know, let me tell you about my dad. My dad used to beat me when I was a kid. He left mum to raise the kids, and I saw him kill an animal with his bare hands.
Yeah.
With that information, you could get the impression my dad was a real rotten tyrant. But let me give you some missing information. The reason he left mum to raise the kids is because he was a carpenter. He's out working, getting money, so we could have food on the table. The reason he beat me, because when I lied or stolen, he took the time to correct me around the place that it hurt, the rear end. We had a little strap in the second drawer. He just say the word second drawer, and I break into a sweat. I saw him kill an animal with his bare hands. Someone had hit a big bird and left it on the side of the road dying. It was in agony. And my dad got out and put it out of its misery, and it grieved him to do so, but he did so.
Hmm.
And so with that missing information, you can see that my dad wasn't a tyrant. He was a very loving and compassionate father. And what Dawkins and others do is they create this tyrant of a God, and it doesn't concern me whatsoever, because I have a secure understanding of what my God is like. He manifests himself in the flesh and said, love your enemies. Do good to those that despitefully use you. Someone slaps you on the right cheek, give them the left. If they take your coat, give them your cloak. You know, have others treat you as you'd like, you know, to be treated, etc. And then he proved his love for me by dying on the cross and taking my punishment. So I have this information the atheist doesn't want. He's willfully ignorant of the truth, and I have a very balanced understanding of God, and I'm not threatened when people say, your God is a tyrant. No, I know the Lord, and I know his loving character.
And by the way, they're rejecting the package deal about God. And I think a lot of flaky Christian approaches do the same thing. They say, you know, God's not very holy. He's not very just. Sin is no big deal. Hell cannot exist. And therefore, the cross is no big deal. And they've kind of, you know, created a Christianity that's not really the Christianity of the Bible.
Well, it's called idolatry. And if you look at Israel, that's what they tended to do. Israel created an image of God, straight into idolatry, and from there came sexual sin, and then came judgment. Remember the creating of the golden calf, and then came judgment because of sexual sin. They took their clothes off, and that's exactly what America has done. It's created a God that I call the divine butler. And when things go wrong, 9/11, we click our fingers and expect God to come running, but it just doesn't work that way. And we're seeing a nation under judgment. God's put his finger on the finances. If you look how he judges Israel, he says, I'll make you financially the tail and not the head. You will borrow and not lend. And the hurricanes and the droughts and the floods and the tornadoes and the cancer that's spreading across this nation aren't signs of God's blessing. And we as the church need to stand up and be counted, step up to the plate and say, hey, you've offended God. He's not like the image you've created. He's to be feared, and we need the pastors to thunder those commandments from the pulpits and put the fear of God in the people, because through the fear of the Lord, men depart from sin, and when there's no fear of God, they hold on to their sins, even if they sit in the pews.
And this is not the time to be watering down the message. When the atheists are saying what they're saying, it's time for us to stand up and say, now, wait a minute, God is a big deal, and sin is a big deal, therefore the cross is a really, really big deal. And it takes some courage. It takes some gravitas to stand up and say what you're saying, Ray.
Yeah, but when you've got weapons that are the state of the art, it helps. Imagine another website. Livingwaters.com is a teaching called Hell's Best Kept Secret. You can listen to freely. That will put a weapon in your hand that will give you courage. Because if I push you in the heat of modern warfare with a feather duster, you're not going to be very courageous. But if I give you state-of-the-art weapons, those weapons, and I teach you how to use them, those weapons will give you courage. And Hell's Best Kept Secret will place something in your hand that will give you the courage you need to proclaim the gospel and truth.
The weapons of our warfare, not carnal, but mighty through God, through the tearing down of strongholds. And I trust that's what you're doing, Ray, with all that you're doing. And I want to point people to your book, You Can Lead an Atheist to Evidence, but You Can't Make Him Think, available at Amazon.com. Ray Comfort, thanks again for joining us on Generations. We appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
God bless. And folks, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. We go to the core of the battle in the War of the Worldviews on this program, addressing apologetics, worldview, Christian education, family relationships, culture, discipling your children in the ways of God, preparing the next generation to take on the incredible cultural battles that will face us in years to come. We do all of this on this radio broadcast, bringing truth and relationships back to a lost and lonely world. I hope you've enjoyed today's broadcast. You can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. Check out our resource section at our website, kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.
You have been listening to Generations with Kevin Swanson, where we take a look at life through a biblical worldview and a generational focus. If you've been challenged by this program, you need to get a copy of Kevin Swanson's new book, Upgrade.
Imagine a summer camp for the whole family. A camp with some great messages that will encourage your family to live and love together the way God has laid out in His Word. Imagine a 5-day camp with some of the best nationally known speakers on the family. A 5-day camp priced from $155. That's $155 for the whole family. We have obtained the use of one of the largest campgrounds in the West for this camp. Scheduled August 21st through the 25th in Glorieta, New Mexico, your family will hear inspiring messages on relationships and loving the family from some of the familiar voices carried on the Generations Radio broadcast. And there will be plenty of time for relaxing fellowship, hiking, volleyball, softball, high ropes course, paintball, miniature golf, horseshoes, shuffleboard, frisbee golf, tennis, ping pong, paddle boats, and canoeing. We have priced this camp so it will be affordable to the largest families with the lowest income and a tough economy. To register or just check out a little more information on this camp, visit our website, renewingthefamily.com. That's renewingthefamily.com. This camp is sponsored by Reformation Church, a family-integrated church located between Colorado Springs and Denver in Castle Rock. Call 303-648-9606 for a brochure or email camp@reformationchurch.com. That's camp@reformationchurch.com. You need to register now. At these prices, we are filling up fast. That's camp@reformationchurch.com.